This is the Inside Segment, where your questions and comments matter at 202-319-7810. Join the conversation.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM, Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. This is the Inside Segment. I'm Harold Fisher. We've seen the hours and hours of store security video of the wave of retail crime across the country. Sometimes it's just one or two people. Other times, it's a mob of thieves rushing stores and overwhelming clerks running out of the stores with arms full of merchandise. But these crimes go far beyond just losses for the retailers. We're talking about the size of the problem tonight and why you should be concerned. My guest is Aisha Bond, president and CEO of the Greater Washington Black Chamber of Commerce, and you, the listener. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisherWHUR, or you can find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Aisha, thank you so much for joining the conversation. This is really important.
Thank you so much for having me here. It's a pleasure.
I want to first share a number with you. This is a national number shared by the National Retail Federation. And it says that retail shrink, when taken as a percentage of total retail sales, when they say shrink, they're talking about thefts, crimes, accounted for 94.5 billion losses. That was just in 2021 alone. I mean, 94.5 billion dollars in retail related crime in 1 year. That's amazing. Kind of put that in context, if you can, for us, please. What is happening with retail and crime right now?
Well, that's certainly a loaded question. There is a lot that's happening. Those numbers, they certainly speak for themselves in some capacity. When you think about the extremities of what would have to take place for that kind of merchandise to walk off the shelves, you recognize it's more than stealing a pack of gum here and there. These are people who are really thoughtfully organizing and really creating economy and industry around theft and opportunity. So, you know, we think about a couple of different instances. So we're thinking about things like Giant, and we're hearing about Costco, we're hearing about big box retail, and they actually account for some of that shrink, right? They budget for that, and it's expected on some level that there's going to be some loss. But when you think about numbers in that, enormous numbers like that, what they do to a smaller business, a singular business, a small retail shop, when you're thinking about that amount of merchandise that's walking off of their shelves, it's paralyzing, really, for that business owner and for that business.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things that we are hearing from the National Retail Federation, specifically from David Johnston. Now, he is the Vice President of Asset Protection and Retail Operations for the Federation. And he talks about the impact of retail crime and what is called ORC, or organized retail crime. This is what he had to say about that.
Shoplifting, and in particular those acts involving ORC, has a much larger impact than just the loss of merchandise. Retailers continue to report an increase in violence occurring during shoplifting events, often associated with organized retail crime. These acts are occurring more openly, and thieves have become more brazen and aggressive in their efforts to steal merchandise. What was considered at one time an invisible crime is now occurring more often in plain sight, with safety concerns to both employees and customers. No merchandise is more important than the safety and security of an employee or customer. And retailers understand that these thefts greatly impact their employees from both a safety and an employment standpoint.
You know, I would say, when you talk about shoplifting back in the day, where, you know, this was something that we saw kids do, we saw adults do it as well, but there were, you know, security guards there. If you got caught, you stopped, they took you in the back, blah, blah, blah. But now what we're seeing with shoplifting, they are becoming more creative, they're becoming more aggressive, as Johnston just said, and it can become, you know, particularly dangerous.
It can indeed, and some of the stories that I'm hearing from business owners are shocking. the violence that he spoke about is very real. We're seeing things like mob groups of young people, that flash mob theft, exactly. So we're hearing about these trends. We're hearing about the fact that they are designed to be violent, whereas shoplifting used to be that quiet crime, and there was some shame associated with it. I think a lot of times one of the things we don't incorporate into our understanding about a lot of aspects is the psyche that it requires, not only to walk into a space, be violent, be overt about your crime, but also the psyche that it takes on that business owner and the people who are working in that store. So again, if you're thinking about someplace like, you know, a grocery store, someplace that already has security and is incorporating that cost in, again, their budget, that is not a deterrent, which is its own issue. But imagine you have a small store and it's you and your spouse maybe run that store, or maybe you and your children are working in that store, and now you have to be worried about either the purchase of additional security or just physical violence on you. I have heard accounts of how overwhelming that is emotionally, some real post-traumatic, you know, fallout from that from business owners. And I think one of the things that I think we're experiencing is that folks feel like they can steal something and it doesn't really hurt anybody. You know, I mean, if you know, violence aside, you know, we're taking it and it's sort of this invisible crime, if you will. You know, Giant can afford it, or this person, you know, they won't feel it. But people do feel it, and there's some of that repercussion is emotional and it's mental, and we're losing people to entrepreneurship because they don't have the stamina, you know, or the psyche to really to manage some of this assault, quite frankly.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about the problem of retail crime, shoplifting, organized theft, organized retail crime, not only the impact on the merchants, but the impact on the community. If you have a question or a comment about this, or even a solution, which would be nice to hear as well, give us a call. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Karen, calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling, Karen. What's on your mind?
Hi, I think it's a good topic to begin to have a more public discussion about. One of my questions is, the one thing is, I recall during the COVID pandemic and or when certain stores are having new release of like sneakers or things like that, they limited the number of people that can go into the store at any given time. And then my question is for the panelists, what are some of the solutions that are being discussed as a way to try to counteract this or resolve the issue?
Mm-hmm. Karen, thank you for that. She raises, you know, an interesting point, because first and foremost, for the consumer, for the law-abiding consumer, you know, you want to go into, you know, a convenience store or a drug store, and because of these issues, they become less convenient.
Mm-hmm.
Because you've got the deodorant that's locked up,
that's
and
right.
You've got what you know, cables on the dish detergent, or cables on the clothes washing detergent. That kind of boggles my mind, especially if you're in a hurry and you're like, can I get some help over here? Because this problem has become so big.
Yeah, no, it's very true. I mean, it's taking away a lot of the liberty that you might take for granted going to get your, you know, your everyday needs met, let alone specialty items and such. I mean, the question that's being posed, I think, is a really important one. How are we trying to mitigate some of this and find some solution? I think one of the things that's most impressive is seeing communities come together, not just communities of store owners, because sometimes that is the case. They'll come together and maybe see if they can collectively invest in more security. They're talking about, you know, their video camera, what are they seeing, starting to figure out if they can recognize if there's some patterns or some trends. I mean, everybody's sort of pulling at various resources and trying to get creative about really finding some solution. But in addition to that, I'm seeing developers and development companies really thoughtfully incorporate more security or think about how they're structuring the development area, where the stores are faced, what kinds of egress and access there is, you know, kind of cornering people, if you will, making sure that if there is that kind of activity, they don't only have one way in and one way out when you're talking about larger areas. So there are a lot of different things that are coming up in these conversations, but unfortunately, I have to say that, you know, there has not been any one solid solution that's creating any impact for the business community.
You know, just about 2 weeks ago, Fairfax County Police announced a task force where they are increasing patrols in the Tysons Corner area because they've been hit very, very hard by shoplifters and other retail crime. The irony of all of that is that increase of patrols comes at a time when not only Fairfax County, but police departments around this region and really across the country, they are already short-staffed.
Exactly.
And they have to move resources to deal with this issue. And, you know, as we know, recently there was a black man who was shot who was suspected of shoplifting. And this can go from a retail crime to, as they say, it can go left really fast.
Indeed. The police are already dealing with quite a few issues that we're aware of in terms of profiling and other factors that come into play, bias, etc. This only exacerbates that. The other part of that is the community policing. You know, people are sometimes taking matters into their own hands, and we've seen what happens when that happens. It's a challenge right now, and business owners are in many ways just really left to deal with it on their own, and I think that's why we're seeing some of the closings that we're seeing.
Yeah. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about the crime wave on retail merchants, shoplifting, thefts, and the like, the impact on the merchants, on the shoppers, and on the community. If you have a comment or a question, lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Brianna, calling from D.C. Thanks for calling, Brianna. What's on your mind?
Hello. Thank you all for brushing some light on this topic today. I just wanted to just shed a comment in regards to people just needing to increase their moral compass. Sometimes we would like to believe that crime is due to financial the constraints, and we just choose to go steal certain merchandises for our activities for daily living. But there are a group of people who actually just choose to steal rather than to spend their financial resources on the things that they need. And I think that we really have to address and sometimes educate the community just on the moral compass within ourselves, either through the mental health system, through churches, or whatever that is available, because they don't see how their moral decision affects the society as a whole. It's like oblivious. They're not even thinking about whether or not the security guard has a family. They're not thinking about all of the money that comes from the resources in terms of shipping and all of those things that affect the person. Sometimes we like to think crime as a financial constraint when it actually boils down to a moral compass. And I think that we need to shed more light on that as well.
Brianna, thank you for your comment. How about that? The thou shalt not steal aspect of this really has broader implications.
No, 100%. She's 100% correct, because what we're finding is that most of this is not out of need. This is not the need-based theft that we think of oftentimes when we're thinking about particularly stealing from a grocery store or things like that. This is just elaborate theft. This is theft for the sake of stealing. These folks are also making a fortune off of resale, which we don't talk about a lot. It's not necessarily that folks are in there stealing something that they even want or that they're bringing home to their dwelling. These people are stealing things so that they can resell, so that they can make a, you know, they can create a markup and act like a retailer themselves. You know, we all know somebody who pops a trunk open and has all kinds of goods and wares in their trunk. They're getting that from somewhere. So we do have to think about this full chain of action. People who then patronize from folks that you know were using the five-finger discount when they purchased that item, or when they acquired that item, I should say. So we do have to think about the moral compass. I think she's absolutely spot on with that.
Yeah. Before we go to a break, I do want to play another comment from David Johnson with the National Retail Federation talking about that very thing.
ORC groups also target everyday consumer goods, balancing between the ease of theft, the monetary value, and the ease of resale. These items, we learned, range from smaller health and beauty goods and over-the-counter medicines to larger home improvement tools and electronics. Luxury goods and expensive jewelry remains a target for some, but our report showed a preference to goods of lesser value with increased resale value.
Yeah. Again, that was David Johnson with the National Retail Federation, you know, talking about, just like you just said, this is a criminal enterprise. Mm-hmm. This isn't necessarily always about need. I need to take a break. I'll get you to comment on that on the other side. Also, Anthony calling from DC, Derek calling from Maryland, Paul also calling from Maryland. Stay on the line. Do not hang up. You will be able to hear the program, and I want to hear from you. We're going to take a break, but don't forget, you can hear every edition of the Daily Drum Inside segment via podcast on WHUR.com, or you can download the 96.3 HD2 app on your smartphone and hear the program live in its entirety. As I said, if you're on the phone, hang on. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141 and 96.3 HD2. I'm Harold Fisher. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. We'll be back on Sirius XM Channel 141 in just a few seconds. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight, we are talking about crime against retail and the broader implications for us as consumers and our community. My guest is Aisha Bond, President and CEO of the Greater Washington Black Chamber of Commerce. If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at H Fisher, WHUR, or you can find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. You know, one of the things that Johnston, David Johnston with the National Retail Federation, also says that the resale of these stolen goods has moved from, and we're showing our age, from popping the trunk, mm-hmm, to online. Mm-hmm. And that is something that I didn't really consider, that you're buying it, you know, stolen goods like Amazon.
Well, it's the byproduct of a perfect storm, is how I like to think about it. We've got technology that's obviously, you know, a very handy and useful tool. We've got all of these sites where you can resell items, and people are very used to now buying online in this capacity. We have the impact of COVID and people being laid off and having to get creative about how they're going to make money and feed their own families. So you have a whole host of things, and then you've just got some of the angst that's in our culture and community in our country over, you know, race and other factors. So we have a perfect storm where people are in what I call a sort of a me-fi-me mode. You know, they're really just thinking about, how do I get mine? How can I hustle? How can I kind of get over on all of these larger systems and just benefit me and mine? And so there isn't this consideration for the ripple effect and how it impacts all of the other business communities and the fallout from the employers, et cetera. People are having trouble hiring folks, people having trouble getting inventory in. There's, you know, a challenge with actual access to cash and capital, which business owners need to compensate for all of this stolen retail merchandise. So there's a whole pond of ripples if we are honest here about what's going on. But you're right. People are conveniently finding resale opportunities everywhere.
Yeah. Let me go back to the phone lines. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Derek calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling, Derek. What's on your mind?
Hi. Yes, good evening. Thank you so much for bringing this topic to the forefront. I am an African-American male, and so I am have gotten used to or understand that when I go into stores, many times salespeople will follow me, and I'm teaching my son that just to relax. That just unfortunately is our reality. My question is, are there any research studies that show particular racial groups who are doing that? And the reason I'm asking is because on more than one occasion, I've been in a store, and of course the salespeople are following me, and I have witnessed it very recently, two white boys stealing stuff while the salespeople are following me. Now, you know, I'm an elementary school teacher, and this is not me, and I just want to know if there are any studies or people being made aware that, you know, people are taking advantage of the stereotypes people have of African Americans. Other racial groups, let me say, are taking advantage of that.
Well, before I have Aisha comment on that, I will say that, you know, coming from a family of educators, you know, I certainly salute you. And I'm sure that when and when you look in the mirror, you see elementary school teacher. And when I look in the mirror and I see a radio news anchor, but when we go into these retail establishments, people see black man.
Exactly.
And I think that's
what I'm teaching my son.
Yeah. And that is one of the unfortunate realities. And I would just offer my own commentary when you, anecdotally speaking, when we look at some of the videos that we have seen happen just in the DMV, whether it's the smash and grab jewelry store robbery up in Bethesda or in some of the high-end stores that are in downtown D.C., at least, you know, from the video that we have seen, we are our own worst enemy because, unfortunately, it's a lot of us, Aisha.
Yeah, well, there is a great array of, I guess there's a new visual of what this person looks like, I think is what I'm getting at here. And to speak to your point, I mean, that's one of the concerns that I have around increased policing or the community policing and things like that, because we bring our racial bias and all of our biases to the table, and we exacerbate problems that we are already struggling to find solutions for. So it really is, again, to highlight what was already noted, it really does exacerbate our entire community and our own sense of safety. But what I will say is, regardless of what we think of when we're thinking of a theft, so whether you are bringing your racial bias or maybe age bias or whatever that might be, we're finding that these folks look like everybody. So some of them are older adults who might be in their 30s, 40s. You know, you would think that these are kids. You would think they're teenagers. You would think maybe they're black or maybe they're Latino or maybe they're punks or whatever you've decided in your head that this mob might look like. What we're finding out is that it looks like a great array of things. But to answer you directly, I don't have any stats on what this, you know, any studies or haven't seen any numbers or reports around who actually is percentage-wise responsible for the majority of this. But I'm sure there will be some studies coming out of this. I mean, it's a crisis, quite frankly, and there are a lot of people who are investing time and energy around solutions and having some understanding.
I will add to Aisha's point, Derek, you know, we're here in the DMV, and there is a huge population of people of color here. However, to, you know, Aisha's point, if you go into, you know, the Midwest, where you may have a black population in Kansas City, which is 12%, for example, been there, lived there, so I know. As opposed to where you have a Washington D.C. or a chocolate city. Well, we're kind of mocha latte now, but that's another issue. But I will say that wherever the majority population happens to be in any retail district, then that is what you're going to find. And, you know, whether you're looking at some of the, you know, kind of the syndicated news, you know, programs, like Aisha said, you will see you know, a 60-year-old, you know, white granny slipping steaks underneath her muumuu.
How about it?
And so and as we said in the beginning of this program, this is a big issue for retailers at large, but particularly I think in the Black community, when you see, and certainly Aisha, you can speak to this, where you see that the city leaders are trying to grow the city, mm-hmm. to increase development. And when these things come in and attack the retailers, it really is an attack on the community.
100%. I mean, D.C. has been trying to just enhance its economic hubs across the entire boundary. And we are seeing the city become more walkable. So you can see neighborhoods become more insular. They're thriving, more shops, more corner stores, more liquor stores, more, you know, every kind of store that would be help a community become insular. That's an excellent thing. And I think it's been something that's been bringing great, tremendous growth and progress to our city. But we are now eating away at that progress because those stores are no longer safe from this kind of attack. So we're going to lose some of the progress that we've been making as a community, as a city. We're going to lose a lot of people of color who are in, you know, entrepreneurship and business owners, retail owners, because they don't tend to have the access to capital to be as resilient as some other business owners, largely white business owners, are. I think one of the things that I hear from my retail business owners that I had to take into account was that, you know, somebody comes into your store and they steal something. It hurts and it's unfortunate and you're upset. But ultimately you say, okay, well, I can file an insurance claim and then I'll get the money back and then I can maybe put some, you know, supplies back on the shelf, et cetera, et cetera. They've got to wait for that claim to come in. So if they don't have cash readily available, they can't then go out and buy more retail material or items to put on their shelf so that their customers have something. Then they're losing customers because they don't have what the customer's expecting. I mean, there's a whole ripple effect, and I think it disproportionately affects businesses of color because they tend not to be as resilient from a cash flow standpoint, and it has a trickle-down effect. And we're going to see, if we're concerned about diversity and making sure that we're maintaining a viable and vibrant Black business community here, this is one of the subtle ways that we eat away at that and we lose the opportunity. I think that's something that's missed when these folks come out and they just kind of rampage a place. They're not thinking about ultimately what that then does to this community within the course of 5 years, 10 years. And they might complain about this looking very different 5-10 years from now. But these are one of the reasons why we get those kinds of results. We lose our Black business owners.
Derek, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Before I go back to the phone lines, one of the things you just mentioned, which I did not think about, and which is why you're here, that any kind of insurance against theft, damage, destruction, if you file enough, your insurance premiums are going to go up.
100%.
And not just yours, but as we know, insurers have a tendency to look geographically.
Correct.
At what may be happening. And so if this is, you know, happening at, you know, Aisha's wig shop, and then somebody is also stealing from Harold's Chicken and Ribs or what have you, insurers are going to look at that, and everyone's rates are going to go up. And I would imagine in some cases, some insurers may drop the merchant, which becomes more difficult for them.
That's correct. It makes them a high-risk retailer, and it's to no fault of their own. And it's something that they can't circumvent or mitigate, predict, or find solution for. So this is what I mean when I say it has really lasting impacts that are long-term. You know, I think there's this idea that there's a sort of a short window and maybe you can bounce back, or that you find a solution and you get back out there. And I think one of the things we don't think about for entrepreneurship and business owners, something that I think about quite a bit, is the psyche of a business owner. And so you have to be a very high risk person to be a business owner. Most business owners are very stressed out. They're usually, you know, one sale away from, you know, something catastrophic. They really are out there on the front lines, really providing a service because they care about the communities that they're in, because they're dedicated. I think we have this idea that if you own a business, there's some maybe pot of gold somewhere and they've got some cash, they wanted to do something with it. That's not the case. They really are invested in the community most times. They, especially businesses that have been around for decades and so forth and so on. You think about somebody who might have had a shop for 20, 30 years by now, and they've raised their kids and they've put their kids through school because of the shop, and now they're experiencing this kind of loss and attack and the violence we've spoken of. They're just waiting for an opportunity to close that door.
Back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Anthony, calling from D.C. Thanks for hanging on. Anthony, what's on your mind?
Hello, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I think the problem that in the conversation of today stems from the big box retailers also promoting these big box brands that get diluted down to the smaller scale stores, and consumers don't care that they're stealing these items and stealing from these big box stores, because they understand that the employees are still going to get paid their hourly wage if they're stealing from Walmart, Target, things like that. And that doesn't affect their life, because overall, if you're working at one of these stores, which I have worked for many, your responsibility is to write a report so it gets claimed later on, but you let the theft happen even if you spot it. But I think you guys mentioned beforehand, back in the day, this wasn't as prevalent of an issue. And you're right. It's all about the perspective. Because when you use these basically material goods, from slave labor, when people steal shirts, they don't care. Because they understand that these companies are cutting corners on their end. And same thing with large-scale farming. When they steal chicken from like Purdue Farms or any of those other big box farms, they don't care because, you know, they understand that there's a dilution. People are probably still, if you break down the numbers, they probably steal much less of local made goods. Because if you go in D.C. farmers markets, you don't see these things happen, or like very localized business where you know the community, because you're selling local goods and products. But if you want to outsource and cut costs that way, you're going to have these effects.
Is that true?
I don't know. I'm going to push back on that a little bit.
I'm not sure I believe that.
We are seeing, I think I understand the point that you make, however, and I understand that there is this idea that, you know, a big box retailer doesn't hurt, and maybe we sort of become immune to this notion that we can kind of steal things, and then we bring that into a smaller shop and take that same, bring that same frame of mind. When that's just not the case, you know, when it impacts the small business owner so much more. But I'm seeing it a lot with our small businesses. We are seeing, you know, I've heard stories from business owners who are making an effort to try to go out in the community and be more visible, to say, hey, maybe if they get to know me, they won't, you know, rob my store quite as much.
Because they like me, so they won't steal from me.
Because they'll like me and they'll create a personal relationship with me, and they'll see me, especially if I am like the folks in this community, maybe we're the same culture, maybe we're the same religion, whatever it might be, they can see a similarity between me and them, and they'll have empathy for me. But they often, you know, shared with me that that just wasn't the case, that they were seeing people come into their store and take merchandise that they would then later see at their grocery store, you know, looking them in the eye once again, knowing that they had just, you know, compromised their store in that way. So it's becoming, you know, there's some immunity here. People are feeling very immune to that moral code that we spoke about a few minutes ago.
Anthony, thank you so much. Also, isn't there a two-pronged problem, particularly when we're talking about big box stores in underserved communities, such as grocery stores? Because, as you know, east of the river, for years and years and years, there had always been this push to have full-service grocery stores. But, you know, the powers that be for years had always resisted it, because they often choose high-end communities where people are spending more. But if you are in a community where people are spending less, but they're also having the same kind of retail crime that every other community is dealing with, so you may be taking in less money, but also dealing with the same level of crime that's going on across the city, which impacts that community.
That's right. That's why I talk about it on a larger scale when I'm talking about, you know, development and, you know, community building, really placemaking, something I like to call placemaking, because people are fighting for these opportunities in their community. They want the Whole Foods and the Starbucks and the whatever it is. They want the designer retail, as well as just the swanky, new, cute, boutique-y retail shops or whatever looks like it's trending and so forth and so on. But you're right. If I am already selling less in this neighborhood, maybe because of disposable income or whatever it might be, and then I'm faced with the same kind of loss in terms of, you know, the ORC that we've been talking about, this organized retail crime, then where is the incentive for me to stay? Developers, where's the incentive for them to build out a new shopping plaza or a new, you know, whatever it might be, promenade. And then that trickles into investing into, you know, pedestrian access and sidewalks and all of the things. So it really is an ecosystem. So when we take for granted that this thievery and the loss that it costs this particular business, it really does cost the whole community that same amount in fold.
Now, you know, earlier I mentioned that in some cases we may be our own worst problem if we are participating in the actual shoplifting or theft. But I think there's also the secondary issue where if you are one who is buying on, can, are we still using the term on the black market?
Right, right. You know, that would be the term.
Yeah. Where, you know, where, you know, I shave my own head, so I haven't been in a barbershop in a while. But, you know, if you're in the barbershop and somebody comes in and he says, look, I've got, you know, these gallon jugs of Tide and I'm selling them for $5 when you know at Giant or Costco or what have you, they're going to cost you $19.95. And so you are contributing to the underworld commerce, which also creates a problem.
No, it does. It does. And I was highlighting that earlier. When you know that stolen goods and they come in the barbershop, you know that those things were not at least paid for in full. I mean, you know they came from somewhere. There's a reason why they can usually even sell them at less than what you would have to pay at the store, et cetera, et cetera. So there is an opportunity for us to sort of do a gut check. And I think that's what these conversations really are, what makes this conversation so important and why people are really raising this issue, elevating the issue to a new height, because it exceeds some of the, you know, some of the black market energy that we're just used to. You're used to a little bit of that here and there. You see it, you know what's going on. But we've gotten past that point. There's so many more people engaging in the process that it's becoming damaging, detrimental, and irreversible to our communities. And I think that's the reason why we're seeing more conversations, more articles, more attention being paid to it. It's not what it used to be. The numbers are exceedingly high. We started out with that $94 million number.
Yeah.
And it's important that we pay attention to it, because we have to. There comes a time in a society where you have to self-correct, right, to make sure that you don't go too far into any extreme space. And we are in a really extreme space with this retail crime issue.
I agree. And not just the impact on the merchants, but also as the National Retail Federation was saying earlier, when we heard from David Johnston, that there is a public safety element, an That's individual right. safety element, not only for, you know, the consumers, innocent consumers who are spending their hard-earned dollars and not stealing, but the resulting police action that could happen, as they say, anything can pop off, literally, and people can get hurt.
Yeah, I think it is that violence factor does become that X factor in this game as well, because we're also struggling with people returning back to work post-COVID for a host of reasons. You know, folks have been struggling to get employers back into the office, back downtown, back to the various places that we used to inhabit all the time. And so you're seeing this impact that even more so. So it's even harder to find an employer. It's even harder to get a full staff. It's even harder, you know, to offer then benefits if you can't get the folks in, you can't get the sales, you can't get this and that and the other. And then it erodes the quality of life for many people.
Let me go back to the phone lines. Paul calling from Maryland. Thanks for hanging on, Paul. What's on your mind?
Oh, yeah, thanks for taking my call. I really love this topic. I was thinking about, you know, I agree with a lot of things you say. You kind of covered a lot of things that I was going to speak on.
Mm-hmm.
However, you know, I'm looking at, today's society and a lot of the youth that's involved in a lot of these snatch and grabs, you know. And unfortunately, you know, when I was growing up, that was one of the things we did also back in the 80s. You know, it just wasn't to this extreme. You might feel a take a couple of candy bars from the 7-Eleven, but ultimately that 7-Eleven on Branch Avenue did get closed down from the snatch and grabs. You know, what I'm saying here is like a generation that has like this reckless attitude of there's no consequences behind what I'm doing. They're not looking at the common cause that their stealing is doing to the community. And, you know, and like I said, I agree with what you say about, I don't buy anything from any merchants on the streets, pretty much. You know, if somebody coming with a backpack, and they got soaps, lotions, and things of that nature, I said, sir, if I can't get a receipt with it, I don't need it. You know,
okay.
Pretty much.
That's a good policy.
Yeah, I like that.
and that's a true statement, you know, and I try not to condone it because, like I said, I realize what it does to the merchants. I wish this can happen, that these merchants can just close down for maybe a month so they don't have nowhere to steal, you know, so they can just look silly in the face, you know. But, you know, of course we can't do that because we need things as well, you know. But that's what I'm saying. I'm just saying a lot of reckless attitudes out here, you know, and they just not really caring about the consequence because they know stealing 50 bars of soap is not going to get you 50 years in jail, you know. Well,
I think you make a good point with that, too, and I want to highlight the consumer confidence piece of it because you noted it quickly, but I think it was really significant. It impacts the other consumers. Consumers don't want to come in that store when they think that they might be at risk. There's other violent things that are happening. We've got people stealing left and right. So we're already in a time where everyone's shopping online anyway. It's hard enough to be a retail business. So folks who are really still pushing to thrive as retailers and to open those stores, let alone maybe franchise or have multiple stores, you're just not seeing success there the way we used to. And right now, you know, this retail crime is incentivizing people to stay home and be online and purchase online and not patronize the small business owner, let alone the minority business owner, that they may, in fact, want to patronize. They may want to support those kinds of businesses, but it's not in their best interest anymore.
Paul, thank you so much for your phone call. So from the merchant's point of view, aside from a police officer standing at every store door, what is the secret sauce answer? How do you legislate this problem? Or is this something, you know, obviously in the District of Columbia we have this legislation moving through the city council right now, the DC council, that would, you know, come down harder on youthful offenders and all offenders, you know, as a whole. But there's got to be something between the holistic and the lock 'em up.
Well, the problem is that we really haven't figured out what that is. I mean, no one wants to come down harder on especially young people who you would like to think could have some promise or turn it around, right? We don't want to over criminalize these acts, but it's really almost the only option that we have, at least in the short term, to get folks' attention, that we are paying attention, that this is something that our community cares about deeply. But yeah, there's some pushback as to whether or not that's appropriate, and then how do we decide how aggressive we become with these terms and with the crime, with the criminal response. But there's not a lot in between.
What else are you hearing from your constituents regarding this problem? Because I don't think that it is exaggerated by the media coverage. This is a real thing.
From a solution standpoint,
yes.
What am I hearing?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's more of the same. They're really coming together. What I'm seeing is a lot of business owners band together in better ways. So making sure that strategically all of the cameras are pointed in a direction so that there's no dead space, for example. I mean, they're sort of doing what they can to try to figure out how to be mightier and stronger together. If we work together, if we're more collaborative, then we can maybe make sure that we insulate ourselves, even if we can't stop this problem citywide or even in our community. We can stop it on this street or on this block or on this corner. So I think they're looking for micro solutions. Like I said, there's increased dollars going towards security, but security is incredibly expensive. I don't know if anybody really understands how, because that's a suggestion that comes up all the time. We have this community, you know, roundtables, and I said, well, let's just get some off-duty police officers, or let's hire a security team or company. it's incredibly cost prohibitive for retailers who just don't have those kinds of funds. So they're trying to figure out how can we establish public-private partnerships so that maybe, like I said, developers or other organizations that have a little bit more funding can lend their money to trying to support and secure the greater areas. But we're also seeing things like the change in hours of operation, you know, trying to guesstimate when am I seeing these hits, when is this happening after school, maybe now I open a little earlier and I close at 3 if I'm maybe a bakery or if my business can sustain that. But it's so specific to what you're selling, it's very difficult to come up with a universal solution because there are some companies or some businesses that do thrive in the afternoon, some that do thrive in the morning, some that do sell merchandise that has to be displayed throughout the store, some that can keep it behind the plexiglass or behind some other kind of barrier. So there are so many different needs to meet. It's very hard to come up with one solution. I think that's why we're seeing the legislation that we're seeing.
You know, you just said something that really struck me. So I'll say this quickly. Even large retailers, I live in Baltimore. Towson Town Center, which is the largest mall in the Baltimore area other than Columbia Mall. And prior to the pandemic, they closed at 9.
Mm-hmm.
They now close at 8.
Small difference, but maybe it helps.
It does. But again, when you just think about it, and gosh, man, I gotta run up to the mall. I gotta grab a pair of shoes. Oh, it's 7:45. I have, you know, okay, I've got an hour and 15 minutes. I can get there in 15 minutes. I know what I want. And you get there and the door is closed at 8:00.
That's right.
Because it is not profitable.
Yeah.
And it is safer.
That's right.
To close at 8 instead of 9. So
think about how many families that impacts.
Absolutely. Well, this has been an amazing, amazing conversation. Aisha Bond, I appreciate your time and hope to have you back.
Absolutely. Thank you. Absolutely. Short but sweet.
That is the Daily Drum for this Wednesday, June 28th. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.